any change in ownership, change in directors, partners, will create a degree of uncertainty. Might be excitement, might be anxiety, but there's generally a sense that change is a little bit unknown.
Welcome to Helping Organizations Thrive. Today I have the pleasure of David Mellard on the show. Good morning to you, David.
Morning, Julian. It's a great privilege to be here, and looking forward to talking to you on this frosty day.
Yes, it's very cold here in the UK right now. I think it was minus 0.5 degrees in my ice bath in the garden. So that was a nice wake-up call for me this morning, but breaking ice off the top. So we're ready to go. But I'm just going to tell people, you are the owner of Bedrock HR, which offers an outsourced HR function to businesses from 1 to 50 employees, as well as consultancy, project support, and mediation to companies of all sizes. And we're going to be exploring managing the exit of a business handover, either to a family or an MBO, but in the context of HR and HR implications of that, because you're a HR specialist. But before we get into that, David, I'd like to ask you, what do you love about what you do?
That's a very good question. So we've been going 10 years now, and so I've had plenty of time to think about this. I have never enjoyed a portion of my career as much as this last 10 years. And the reason is I get to be involved in the running of around 30 businesses to some degree or other. I sit on the boards of some. We have a more of an arm's length relationship with others. What I love is problem solving in the people arena. My vision is that people will have good employment in small and medium sized businesses. Larger organizations will tend to have more focus on culture and other interventions. A lot of SMEs and charities, schools will just be so concentrated on the day job that they don't have that opportunity. And as Bedrock, the businesses and organizations we work with, we want to see them create the best possible employment for their people. And when we see that happen and retention rates go up, attrition go down, staff satisfaction surveys provide better results, then I feel we're doing a worthwhile job.
Fantastic. It sounds quite a varied work you've been doing over the last 10 years.
It is. Our smallest clients have two or three employees, and our largest at the moment has about 130. Our sweet spot is probably between 20 and 50, and that's probably the bulk of our client base now. We provide all the services that an in-house HR department would provide, but we don't provide it all the time. We tend to work between 2 and 4 days a month, sometimes slightly less, with our clients. And the secret is them feeling like we're always there, even though the number of hours during the month might be sort of between 10 and 20. That's what we do.
Fantastic. So we're talking this morning about the implications from a HR point of view. If a company sells itself, or it goes to an MBO, or even hands over to a family, and you know, people listening right now might be in that scenario right now. They're about to sell their business, or they're about to do an MBO, or they've got sort of family sort of handover. So I think first point to start is what do you perceive as the challenges? Let's always start with the challenges. Always a good place to start with all the potential problems, the issues, the challenges that are faced with that sort of scenario from a HR point of view.
Yeah, so I think any change in ownership, change in directors, partners, will create a degree of uncertainty. Might be excitement, might be anxiety, but there's generally a sense that change is a little bit unknown whether that's good or bad. And so I think being able to sort of be open, transparent about the aims and objectives of the new owners is key. On a practical level, looking at any differences in terms and conditions, those kinds of things. I mean, I won't talk about Tupi today, but when one company buys another out entirely, then Tupi rules apply. And so there are some laid down processes that you have to go through. But I was going to focus more on where maybe a group of managers within an organization buy that organization or part of it, perhaps because somebody's coming up to retirement. And when the owners of an organization want to pass that on to family. So in both of those scenarios, there could still be a degree of uncertainty. We've been working with an organization very recently who it's a small manufacturing company, employs about 30 people. And the founders, a couple, it's been going for sort of 30 odd years, and they want to take things easy now, and they want to hand over to their son. And one of the things I think they're doing really well is putting a support sort of envelope around him so that his skills can be augmented by people, either consultants like ourselves or others in different areas, marketing, finance, etc., so that he has got all the support he needs to make a success. I think if you apply that to an MBO situation, again, it's useful if the people selling are able to make sure that if there are any skills gaps with the people buying, and in a SME scenario, if it's people within the organization already, by definition, they will have an awareness of what they're good at, what they need to learn. And I think working together in an honest and open way to make sure that when the transfer happens, the skills are in place to continue the effective running of the business or organization, I think that's key.
Yeah, and I think with any, you know, whether a handover to a family, like you were saying, that example you said, or an MBO, there's a lot of potential nervousness from the rest of the employees, isn't there? Because they've always had this, you know, that example of the family-owned, the sort of founders and the owners been running it for many years, and suddenly in the hand of the son, which they'd probably be aware of, he might be working there already, but there's a sense of nervousness, uncertainty, and it's that whole change process, isn't it? And how we help navigate those with employees. So what's your thoughts on that, and what have you been helping with the employees of that company, for example?
Yes, I think an important thing is to have a decent run at it. I think anything that's sudden or a surprise, which can happen in the case of illness, another business we're aware of, the founder had a heart attack and his 20-something-year-old son had to take over, and the staff had to adapt very quickly. That's not ideal. In an ideal scenario, there's a lead-in time, perhaps a couple of years, and the son, daughter, relative coming in, or even when it's somebody who isn't a relative, but the chosen successor, has a period alongside the outgoing management, so that the employees will see as little sort of sudden change as possible. I think part of this is making sure that the people taking over have adequate training, and sometimes that might be a secondment to another business, time outside of a business to learn something different, to come back in. Obviously, coaching, I would be remiss for me not to say that coaching by people like yourself plays a big part in, first of all, identifying where the needs are and then meeting them. I'd say also just having time for the incoming management to spend with the employees, sort of I think walking the floor, being part of what they do, just having time available to know and be known, I think will go some way towards avoiding the anxiety as well.
Yeah, no, I work with an organization as a consultant, and they had a very long sort of strategic plan of handing over to a family member. I think it was potentially like a 10-year plan, quite a significant business. And they got this individual who then has done various roles. I think he's about on year 5 or 6 now, and he's doing various roles in the organization. And at some point, he will take the helm. And I think, to me, that they're doing it in a really good way, because he's getting exposed to many aspects of the business. So understanding, he's also getting known and starting to get an impact, and also he's getting his level of seniority. And he's not just being given it as in, here you are and you've got no skills and no confidence. People know the person, they feel confident and reassured that when he does take the helm, well, he's done various roles here, he's been successful, that type of stuff. I think the sudden one is always a challenge, because suddenly, you know, a young person of the family member takes over and they don't really know much about the business is quite a shock. In that situation, because sometimes, as you say, things are, how do we navigate and manage that with, I suppose, reassuring employees, but also supporting the person taking the helm?
Yeah, I mean, it, just as you were talking there, I was thinking one of my sports is yacht racing. And I think, although the only requirement, I suppose, to own a racing yacht in this country is to be able to afford it. But taking that aside, it's the foolish owner who doesn't do every job on the boat, from the foredeck to the winching, etc., before taking over the helm. And so I think even in a scenario where somebody unexpectedly takes control, because the demise of somebody or illness, I think to have had, if there's an expectation that one day they will be taking control, and I think all the way through their employment from a very young age, expose them to everything that's happening, make sure they're known. There is an issue sometimes with a sense of entitlement that comes with being the son or daughter of the owner, and that can lead to clashes, particularly with older employees. So I think the people skills are as important as the technical skills. I think that's true of any management role, but I think particularly in this scenario where there's potential for distrust and being unsettled, I think making sure that it's drummed into the successors that actually, you know, this is the way to behave, this is the way to get the best out of people. But actually having, again, having an attitude of being able to learn is important, especially if you're coming in and you're younger and less experienced than the people you'll now be managing. Then I think making sure that you utilize the experience in the business at whatever level, and gain opinions and traction. I think that style of management works well if you're the young pretender coming in. Yeah.
And in terms of, you know, because obviously when, you know, there's change, people get a bit nervous, and, you know, we want to ensure that we retain key talent in that organization. Mm. People don't walk because of this sort of crucial transition and feel nervous or just disillusioned or whatever. What HR practices or initiatives have you found proven to be effective in retaining those employees through the process of an MBO or a family sort of handover?
Yeah, I think, well, as I said, having a decent lead-in time is important. Having plenty of communication, let me just kill that. I think the important thing about the communication as well is that it's two-way. So I think having opportunities for existing team members to be able to ask questions, give opinions, right at the beginning when it's first announced that there'll be an MBO or a succession. I think having plenty of opportunities to for the incoming people to share their vision, share the direction they want to go in, be honest about the challenges they feel they face, and just create a sense that employees can ask questions, and being as transparent as possible. Now, there might be some aspects of any takeover where there are sort of aspects that need to remain confidential, either for a period of time or even completely. But I think, as a rule, trying to be as transparent as possible definitely works. I think also this might be more difficult, but if a person coming in, if you like, has been known from being very young onwards as the boss's son or daughter, then finding ways to show that there's been a growth in maturity, that actually the arrogant sort of 21-year-old has actually become quite a mature 30-year-old is really useful. And I think ways of doing that include just maybe responsibility for particular projects or other things that sort of demonstrate that there is capability there. One thing I has just come into my mind that I think needs to be borne in mind in any scenario, whether it's a group of managers getting together to buy out the business or whether it's a succession, it's useful if there's a plan B. So if there's an MBO planned and then one of the key people decides, actually, this isn't for me anymore, they're offered a job somewhere else, they decide to go, either that whole plan can fall apart, or perhaps there's planning for what happens in that scenario. Similarly, with a succession, if the family members are being prepared, and then perhaps they decide it's not for them, or something goes wrong in the relationship with the parent who's looking to exit. I think having a plan B is important, and I mean, we've all seen the recent series Succession, and how it can go wrong when the dominant parent is trying to play one off against the other. I'm not suggesting that, but I think having a choice of another couple of people who have been also prepared to take on more responsibility isn't a bad thing, because it does cover the possibility that somebody might drop out somehow.
And I think with this, I found, I mean, even in a corporate environment, you obviously get new people taking the helm of businesses, it's being as you best you can to be transparent. And how do we, I suppose, balance that transparency without and sort of confidentiality and timing and everything else? Because that's quite tricky, isn't it? When things are happening, because I've been in an organization where we're having restructures, sometimes with redundancy, sometimes it's just a takeover, and people are aware I'm in private discussions with certain people, but I can't share. And obviously there's a trickiness, and you want to share, but you can't share because of timing and legalities and everything else. How do we manage and navigate that in these scenarios? Because making people feel a bit like left out and in the dark, as it were.
I think this is, in some ways, it's probably slightly easier in smaller organizations because the time scales can be smaller. When I was I worked in the university sector for a while and was involved in the takeover. Well, it was really a takeover, but badged as a merger between two universities, and I was seconded to the estates department to merge two departments that each had about 250 people in. The difficulty there was the lead-in time was too great, really, in my opinion. But it was a very complicated thing to merge these institutions. And one of the things that I think we didn't do very well was just keep people hanging for much longer than really we needed to. There was a sense of, there were definitely details that couldn't be shared, but we could have shared some of the information earlier. I think in a smaller organization, particularly where you're not tied into unionized consultations, etc., I think you can always err on the side of giving more rather than being too cautious. Obviously, within the law and within common sense as well, certainly where price is being negotiated and those kinds of things, then there are aspects that it would be foolish to share. But I think focusing on the what does it mean for Bob or for Brenda when the change happens, you know, I'm responsible for one aspect, or my role is one aspect of the business. What's going to happen to me? That's really what people want to know. So as much as you can share about the impact on the individual, whether it's going to be the location of the work, and nowadays that could be, you know, what's the appetite for working remotely, for example. So that sort of thing, any changes to team structure. You might have been reporting to one person, you might now be reporting to another. Giving good thought to those kinds of details, because actually once they're at least penciled in, if not completely inked in, then you should be able to share some of that, and that will actually reassure people on a day-to-day level, I think.
Well, this comes down to how we communicate and having almost a plan of communication, isn't it? Because you know, when there's no communication, when there's a void, people fill that with their own sort of ideas,
fears and misgivings. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And that just then spirals and suddenly creates the wrong atmosphere, and culture and productivity starts to get wane, and then people then start to leave and everything else. And I know certain corporates, it can be like that. So I guess it's almost each stage when you're planning these processes, almost ask the question, what can we share now? What is relevant? What will be helpful?
Well, I think what can we share? But I think actually it's quite useful to give people a role in the change that's happening. So for example, when we merged the two estates departments of the two merging universities, we made sure that there were little subgroups that were involved in meeting up, and we made sure there was time for them to do this, but subgroups meeting up to discuss different aspects, just different practicalities of how they can work and merge what they're doing. So they felt involved. I think, again, the social side is quite important. I mean, in that scenario, we made sure that there were beers and pizzas at 5 o'clock on a Friday several times, where people were able to come along and meet each other. And sometimes, you know, there's a view that, you know, people on the other side of the wall have got horns and can't be trusted. And actually introducing some more interaction can allay some of those fears sometimes. So I think all of those things have a place.
Yeah, and also with any change, or whether, you know, succession of a family member or an MBO, is I think where a lot of organizations sort of go wrong. They don't honor the past, and you almost got to honor what's gone before you, isn't it? And almost when you talk about that transition, you've almost got to say what was good rather than now today is really good because we're taking charge. It's gonna be so much better. It's more about honoring the past and then moving forward with new ideas, new impetus, new momentum. And I think that's important as well, isn't it? To sort of make sure you don't disingenuize people in terms of what happened before was all rubbish, but actually, no, it was great. We're just building upon that, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is very tempting. It's very tempting that the people coming in will use the We'll try and sort of use the card of you were struggling before. There won't be any more struggle. We're entering into the promised land. And I think, yes, absolutely. But I think part of that is actually having a dual presentation, having both the outgoing and the incoming leaders talking to the staff at the same time, formally, but also informally. When you get the smaller groups, it obviously depends on the size of your organization. If we're talking about, a 20-person organization and father's handing over to son or daughter, then this doesn't have to be structured in such a formal way. It could just be time spent on the shop floor or the office floor. But having the two talk to the group together, I think fosters that sense of respecting what has gone before. But also it's really helpful. I mean, I've been aware of one father who actually spent a bit of time saying, I've taken this business as far as it can go. My son, in this case, has worked for us when he was very young. He went off, he's worked for other people. He's got more ideas. He's studied for an MBA. He's come back, and I'm confident now that he's going to be able to put some of that learning into practice. And I'm going to be here still. I'm going to be in the background. But that's another point I wanted to make. If you look at how it works in football, when a new manager comes in, the old manager is out the door. There's no period of grace. There's no continuity. There's no sort of massive handover. They're out and the new is in. And it must cause shockwaves around the dressing room. And I think some of that is probably unnecessary. Some of it probably can't be avoided. But I think in a family scenario, actually having the prospect of mum or dad coming in from time to time for a coffee, coming back to the Christmas party, being there at the staff away day, that can be useful. But there has to be a lot of coaching and thinking around that, because obviously you don't want somebody coming back and saying, oh, I wouldn't have done that and I wouldn't have made that change. I don't know why you've done that. I think that's to be avoided. So if you like having the previous leaders coming back in to give sort of some sense of continuity, but without sort of being very careful not to critique the changes that are being made, I think is a good idea as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important actually, because that can be really positive, as you say, but also can be a really negative thing where they're hanging around still saying, why are you doing that? And why are you doing that? And just sort of questioning and everything again. So it's that balance of it's almost getting people to that place of what your role is once you've left, but you're still around, understanding what part you have to play now. And it's very different. And you're more of a figurehead, reassuring sort of a type of role, isn't it? Rather than you coming with your ideas again.
The last thing I wanted to sort of talk about was the what happens to the person selling or retiring? What about them? Because quite often the thought can be, well, they're getting their money and they can sail off into the sunset. Quite often the handover is more nuanced than that, especially the financial side, where maybe money is paid over a period of time by the people involved in the MBO, or even in family scenarios. But one thing I thought was quite clever with one I was involved in recently, they had a factory, an office, and the founders kept hold of the freehold, and they basically lease it now back to the business. And that was deliberate, partly because it provides a retirement income, but partly if for some reason the business went down, either because of poor management or recession or something else, they've still got an asset that can provide them with an income. And I think it's really important that that's all structured in a sensible way, and people with more sort of tax and financial experience than me would be able to advise on that. But I think getting that all right as well, so that, you know, where possible, everyone's interests are served, is really important.
Yeah, that's a good way of getting some longevity, certainly for the person who sold the actual business. Thank you for your insights today, David. It's been really helpful. Talk us through the examples you've shared, but also the insights in how we might manage some of the HR implications for these scenarios. If people want to connect with you and get in touch with you, what's the best way of doing that?
Yeah, so my email address is david@bedrockhr.co.uk. That's all lowercase, david@bedrockhr.co.uk. Our website is www.bedrockhr.co.uk, and there's a facility there to leave messages. I would be delighted to have a coffee, a chat about any of the aspects we've spoken about. And I look forward to hearing from anyone who feels I might be able to add some value.
Brilliant. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you like this episode, then please rate, review, and share it with your friends and colleagues. As a coaching practice, I coach high-performing leaders and teams with extreme ambitions, and it will help you go beyond what you believe is possible. If this sounds like you, then let's have a conversation. You can contact me at julianrobertsconsulting.com.